He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
It is indeed, and I have two car tests which I will relate to our listeners for this week's show. One is the Jeep Gladiator, which I got a very good test drive experience in last week. It was a Rubicon edition, which meant it had just about everything they could load up on it. But what I was really interested in, was it going to be a harsh ride? Was it going to have other issues that would make me think twice about wanting to own one? The answer to that part is probably I don't want to own one. I think they've built a very good vehicle. The cab is a bit tight for probably people of larger stature because it is not on the same size level as the big three standard size pickup trucks. And we can add the Toyota and the Nissan big trucks too. It is definitely tight. They're all four doors as far as I can tell right now, although I think there may be a two-door coming later on in the production, giving a longer pickup bed possibly as an option for users. The pickup bed the whole truck feels about, I don't know whether to say, three-quarters the size of the big boys, or maybe
Does it feel miniature, or does it feel...
No, it doesn't feel miniature, but I'm not sure. I haven't driven any of the new mid-size Colorado Canyon Ford Ranger-size pickup trucks to see what their interiors are like for their quad cab units or not. But it definitely is not a full-size pickup truck comparable to the full-size pickup
which
trucks.
Which is presumably
as far as
bed
the idea? Size and cab size. Well, it shouldn't be. The Jeeps are just not that big anyways. But they've done a very nice job. The interior is impeccable, I think. The Rubicon comes with a two-tone interior with what I would call a metallic red interior to the dashboard. But let's get to the V6 engine, which is the powertrain right now, the only powertrain you can get, although a diesel is on its way, and whether or not they'll add a four-cylinder version of the engine later on, I don't know. But the V6 is there with the 8-speed transmission. Acceleration is, I was a bit disappointed as I pulled out of the dealership in the truck because I actually was just not really being very aggressive with it, just to get used to it, how it was going to feel. It had great big off-road capable treaded tires on it, and I found them to be a bit squirmy in terms of steering stability. Probably it's the tire itself more than the steering system in the Gladiator. But it was very firm. The ride was it has Fox shocks, so those who know about Fox shock absorbers will know that they're very good shocks, and they do control the bed hop very well. It did not seem to want to hop around. It was empty. It didn't have any load in it. So it was basically, it was not bouncy, which I thought it might be as I took it over a
side. Is it meant to be loaded?
It can be loaded, but it's not meant to be loaded. But pickup trucks with empty pickup beds are noticeably bouncy in the rear if you are on fairly bouncy road terrain. Washboard services, I didn't get on a real dirt road to try that out. But it was tight, quiet. It had the navigation, it had this good stereo system and all that, which I didn't really test fully, but the Rubicons, probably with any kind of options above the $49,000 base price for a so-called stripped Rubicon version, was in the mid-50s, and it was a hard top. It did not have the soft top. They haven't yet shown up in dealers' inventories. They're special order, as far as I can tell right now, and no stick shifts are yet have yet been seen in a dealership's lot.
Is there interest?
There are some special orders of those out, according to both the dealers I have had the experience of talking about the Gladiators.
I'm not talking about standard per se. I'm talking about the gladiators. Is there interest in that particular small tribe?
You mean as far as people? Yes, you know, there. Jay will probably chime in on this because we were talking about that before we came over. I think I don't know whether it's going to become a quickly saturated vehicle or not. Certainly, it's you're not going to cross shop. I think a Ford F-150 Chevy. Silverado or the Dodge 1500 Ram against the Jeep Gladiator. Whether or not you're going to cross-shop that against the midsize pickup trucks remains to be seen, but I doubt that's really going to happen, and Jay wants to speak.
Well, I'm sure there are archives of all these shows, and I will go on a limb now and say...
Out on a limb?
Yep.
Okay.
Out on a limb.
Okay.
I'm going to say it's a fad and it's a toy. Okay. And it's mostly a toy hauler. I think that... It is not a truck. When I think trucks, I think people who work with their vehicles, which is what F-150s and 250s and 350s and all the big pickup trucks and even the the smaller trucks have been used for historically. I think this truck is more going to be used for hauling coolers, bicycles, grills. You know, the kind of stuff you can't
maybe
put in
a
an enclosed
bike.
Jeep. Maybe, but dirt bike guys really, they use real trucks.
They do use real trucks and snowmobiles. You're not going to fit more than one snowmobile in that. And you may not be able to fit more than one snowmobile in the back of a F-150 either. But they're not going to use, I agree with Jay. I think this
I'm profiling this, but it's a toy hauler. And that's fine. That's great if you're into the outdoorsy stuff and you haul around stuff that you would not put in a car. Or an enclosed vehicle.
Like the Wrangler four-door, which is probably the way to go.
Sure, why not?
I was just wondering. I
don't know what its life cycle is going to be, whether sales will be really hot for the first year so everybody gets one and then they tail off. And then the question is, will they keep producing it 10 years down like they didn't with the last round of Jeep pickups?
But people with real active lifestyles also drive Subarus. I just saw a picture on Facebook of a friend of mine who's got a fairly newish Subaru Forester, and he had a Sunfish sailboat on it, a bicycle, and everything else he needed to go off on a three-week trip. That's an activity vehicle.
And the one thing with that vehicle also is that the gas mileage is going to be better. There are a lot of vehicles that will do exactly what this Jeep Gladiator will do. So you get back to Honda Ridgeline, exactly. And VWs may be coming on stream with one. Who knows? But I think that the Jeep Gladiator is certainly distinctive looking. Nothing is going to look like it. You won't have any problem seeing it coming down the road. I don't think anybody who gets a pickup truck should get any pickup truck without the bed liner sprayed or otherwise installed on it if you're going to actually load stuff into a pickup bed, because a non-lined pickup bed is painted beautifully and it'll be scuffed up and messed up with the first time you put anything in it.
I'm going to go another step further now.
Okay.
On that limb, yeah.
Are your arms
okay.
Out?
I think Jeep kind of needs this vehicle because right now I think that FCA is diluting the Jeep brand over time. It's their cash cow. It's the most profitable line of vehicles in the whole Chrysler Fiat lineup. Others are doing pretty dismally. But the Jeep also, they need the Jeep image to be that of a tough,
rugged
all-terrain
end, I
vehicle.
I think they've got it made.
And with the Wrangler and variations on the same theme, it kind of, if nothing else, it reinforces and builds on that image of rugged four-wheel vehicle. And if for that reason only, it makes sense putting it out, go for
and,
it. Because they're going to need
and
it.
Right. They should not soften their image too much on going down the Cherokee line.
Renegade, Patriot, all these little liberties.
Alternatives, yeah. I will say that there are other manufacturers that are now bringing out more rugged, intended versions of the RAV4 and the Forester and all that to try to take away some of this Jeep allure. But I still don't, and I've been looking at, I drive a Cherokee, as listeners know. I think it's wonderful. It doesn't matter how many. I looked at I saw a new RAV4 come down the road with, I believe, if it's not called an off-road package option, it's certainly got more of a robust look to it than the standard RAV4. And I was trying to say, Jay wants to hop in here, I was trying to say in my head, would I like to be driving that vehicle more than my Cherokee, come to the bottom of a steep, grassy hill and take that one off-road as easily as I take my Cherokee off-road? And the answer in my head was no. So Jeep, if they can hold on to the fact that they have the image of being the most off-road worthy crossover line without getting to the Wrangler level of their vehicle lineup, they will stay well out front. But
side note question, what did you think when you see that RAV4 go by you, the new RAV4? What does it make you think of?
A Lexus front end.
No, I'm looking at the back now.
Oh, the back?
Doesn't it look just like an updated Jeep Cherokee?
I have not looked at that, so I can't answer the question.
Okay. I think it does. Yeah. So, speaking of Jeep, FCA, some of us have read the news, the industry news. Now there are talks of FCA merging on a 50-50 with Renault.
My vote is no.
Moved out of
there. There's a number of reasons. Jay may bring them up, but I'm not sure I concur that this would be good for Jeep. It might be good for Renault, but I don't know if it would be good for Jeep. Do you have an opinion?
I'm not sure. I tend to be. It's I tend
FCA
to agree with
to
you
merge,
that
Jeep
it's
merge,
not so. Good for, that the merger is not a good idea, but I think it's not a good idea for Renault. I don't think I would not touch FCA with a 10-foot pole. As far as a company.
Isn't Renault trying to just get into a different, like,
well,
change
Renault
the conversation?
Well, Renault may or may not get back into the U.S.
Renault is very strong, has a good product line, and they're very strong
in Europe,
in Eastern Europe. They have a strong presence in Russia. They bought Lada back
when?
I don't know if it was the late, I can't remember if it was the late 90s or
Lada
early 2000s.
Lada used to be old Fiats.
Yeah, yep. Lada. They bought Dacia, which is a Romanian company. So they have a presence in Eastern Europe and also in Africa. So, you know, although they're not on the American present on our market, and they would love to be, of course, the last time they associated themselves with what was then American Motors, it did not work out too well for Renault.
Correct.
And I have no reason to believe that it would work out any better now.
And this is our opinion, of course.
It's our opinion.
But
FCA has a problem. I mean, the whole Fiat Chrysler line of products, you know, aside from Jeep and Ram, they have outdated products that are not selling. Not here,
correct.
Not in Europe, not anywhere else.
Which is, when you're trying to sell things, an issue.
Back
did
to
you
a,
want
yeah.
to
I have
a another
few final
car,
moments.
Or?
Yes, I have another test to go through quickly. I want to just finalize the test drive of the Gladiator because it was very tight. Handling was very precise. I liked the weight of the steering, which is how much resistance you get when you steer a car, and many cars have zero resistance steering systems, which the testers don't seem to like. I don't know, they're very easy. But overall, I was very impressed with the drive, but it certainly did not feel like a full-size pickup ride, probably because it is a Jeep and because of the model that I drove, which was Rubicon, which has every option needed to do anything you can possibly do off-road, as long as you don't hit boulders underneath, and then some. The next test drive, I'll swing right into it so we can go to Jay for the final part of the show.
You've got less time for this one than you did for that one.
I test drove a Model 3 Tesla over the weekend. And it was very exciting to do because I've been wanting to test drive a Tesla since the S came out 5 years ago, and I was told I could go drive a local resident's Tesla S since the day she got it, and I never went to take her up on it. So I got a nice test drive over the weekend on a Model 3, the owner of who loves it, but had a disappointing, in her opinion, delivery experience of the vehicle. Going from the fact that when she went to pick up the car, It was not ready for pickup because the battery hadn't been fully charged, and they were charging the battery, which I don't know whether they had a supercharger in the delivery center or not, but they told her it was going to be an hour and a half before she could take the car out with enough range to
get home.
Well, she was supposed to be going to an event, so she was late to the event. They also never gave her, in that hour and a half wait, any instruction on what to do with the car when she got in, although they asked her if she had any questions about it, to which she says she answered loads of them, or buckets of them. But they didn't sit her in a car, maybe there wasn't one available, to take her through the touchscreen dashboard, which is what it is. And so she left the place without knowing. Actually, she left the place and came back because she tried to put an address in for the navigation and couldn't figure out how to do it. And I guess she figured out how to get to where she was going. But aside from that experience, which was not very satisfactory, she loves the car and has had no problems with it. She has the they call it a dual motor on the back of it. They don't say all-wheel drive, but dual motor means you've got all-wheel drive, you know, an all-wheel drive version versus a two-wheel drive version. They may all be dual motors now. I don't know.
And does she have her own charging station?
She has her own charging station. She did put in a 240-volt system. She started out with the 110 plug-in. That was so slow. She did upgrade it to a 240-volt higher speed plug-in. She has two charging cords with the two different current majority of the charging stations attachment designs, so she can go to a Tesla charging station or a non-Tesla charging station. But there's apparently a third and maybe a fourth plug design out there which she cannot access. Anyways, let's go to the drive. The acceleration, as Jay has been telling me for a long time, is, if not ludicrous, excellent and very definitely enough. It has a self-driving or self-steering capability, and I went from Hotchkiss School Corners in our local area to Sharon with my hands off and on at the ready to grab the wheel, but I didn't touch the wheel all the way to going down the hill into the center of Sharon. It has a very strong self-braking coast down feature. You can't coast in this car at all, at least at the settings that she had it set at. I asked my counterpart here, Jay, whether you could adjust the amount of coast down braking. It is so severe that you basically have to figure out when you're coming up to a stop sign, you can stop without even putting the brakes on. But you also can stop well in advance of getting to the stop sign. And as she says, I've had some drivers behind me quite annoyed because I was coasting to a stop, but I was braking so effectively that I was stopping quite far before the stop sign part.
I think the stop lights do come on when you just lift, even though you're not braking, because there is a braking effort on the part of the car.
Yes, and it's a recharge. It recharges the battery.
It recharges. I mean, there's.
But it's so aggressive that you could not coast down your hill off of Music Mountain Road. You would not be able to ever coast with your foot off the pedal. You have to keep your foot on the pedal in order to keep the car going at a steady speed.
It's like driving a John Deere hydrostatic. Ever done that before?
She's never driven a hydrostatic.
Can't say I have.
But yeah, it's like hydrostatic transmissions. They basically bring you to a stop
in the field.
Quickly.
I mean, there's
in
nothing.
The field, right?
There's nothing. You just stop.
Ride was excellent. The silence was wonderful. You had a very. You can have a. You don't have any road noise of significance entering the cabin. You don't have any engine noise, of course. You have no engine whine either.
So you're a fan.
So I'm a fan. Absolutely.
Congratulations.
And
that's
I assume it'll be nice if I can get to an Audi e-tron. And some of the others. Both Jay and I, did you try the Bolt, Jay?
Yeah, I tried the Bolt.
Yeah, both Jay and I have driven the Bolt, which was all electric in a Chevrolet. And to that end, there were a lot of similarities, but I think the Tesla was much quieter. Of course, the Tesla and the Bolt are not the same kind of vehicle.
They both have a place.
They both have a place, and electric vehicles are definitely, you can see why there are people that are just love these electric vehicles.
Well, and more to the point,
they'll be coming on stream a lot more quickly in the next 5 years.
They're doing a really interesting ad for them that I makes me
Tesla
think of
or electric vehicles?
Electric vehicles,
okay.
Which makes me think of you every time. And they say, well, maybe you don't want this, and maybe you don't want this, and maybe you believe this, and maybe
well, that's
you
the Audi ad.
Well, whatever it is. Whatever it is designed to reorient people's mentality.
And we did you see the pictures of the Audi e-tron GT, the sedan?
No, I have not.
Oh,
I've been behind an Audi e-tron.
Is it nice?
It's going to be nice.
In Fairfield.
See, that's what I what I like is some car coming out that's going to look nice, you know, that, that just gets that. It's like, oh, wow, that's
but
that's
as Jay said, I think, Jay, the Tesla is really is still the brand that people want to buy,
of course.
Think. And, Jay, it's now your turn.
Well, before we do that,
okay.
Tesla, you know, Tesla's always going to be the first out of the box, just like the Prius was first, just like Toyota with the hybrids.
Well, the question is, will it maintain its lead over, or is it going to be diluted by all these other electric cars?
Or rocket launches.
There will definitely be a dilution.
Rocket launches or underground
cities.
And
we're now to the safety section of our program for this week. Jay?
And possibly going forward. It is June. Is June Auto Safety Month?
I think June is auto safety
month. Any month should be auto safety month.
Absolutely. But this is a time of year we're slowly, well, no, we're rapidly, hopefully, easing into summer. And it's also the time of year when kids get out of school. They start driving. Some of them get their licenses over the summer. They work. They get, you know, they make money. They go buy their first car. Parents help them or not. But it's also the time of year when bad things happen on the roads, you know, and I think we talked about it
last year,
and
which was just really diabolical.
Yep.
So,
you know, I was listening to actually Marshall and Bob Green. When was it? Last week?
Yeah,
I think a few days ago.
It's for the defensive driving course.
You know, Father's Day is coming up. Bob was promoting, you know, a Father's Day gift on social media. And parents out there should consider doing that sort of program with their kids. The bigger picture is that I think we need to somehow collectively make kids, you know, aware of the risks and the responsibilities that come with driving.
Because even though they think they're invincible, which is cool, they if you can just orient them to go, well, right, you're invincible, that's fine, but you're out there with a bunch of other people.
Well, Bob Green's program, in my opinion, I'll jump in here, because what is not being said and needs to be said is that I've said for decades that I believe that the standard driver education programs are just woefully inadequate for teaching these kids what really can happen in a driver situation.
Well, you also
and kids get into these hot rod cars or whatever, and driver education courses do not teach you.
Most of them don't get in hot rod cars.
Well,
most of them get in regular or cheap or crappy cars.
Drive
and that's part of the problem.
And that you just don't know. It's one of those experience things you don't know until you've had some experience. So a course like that
you can take it right up to the adults too. Adults could use those courses.
Yeah.
If you learn from people who are bad drivers, and there are a lot of them out there,
right.
You know, chances are you're going to pick up bad habits. And so I think that these courses like Bob's are just, you know, it's a reminder of what you should be thinking about, what you should be doing, of things you can practice behind the wheel of a car, the things you should not try by yourself.
Just out of the box?
Out of the box or on the roads. But, you know, yes, in a controlled environment, we need to learn more about car capabilities.
Skidding.
But I think we have, as parents, we have a role in trying to make sure that our kids...
Come home,
but get into cars that are as safe as possible. And I always tell people when people say, well, what car should I get my kid or contribute to, you know, helping them get? And to me, the answer is always the same. The safest and the newest car possible. The newer cars are way better than what we had 10 or 20 years ago. New cars, good tires, and then learn to be smart.
And
one thing I am not in favor of is all the electronic devices that monitor cars, because it's just, I mean, that's just me. I don't support being monitored.
No, totally understand that. Just the other thing you can do, just to your point.
You mean the parental controls you can put on the cars.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, no, because kids are kids and they'll figure out a way to override them. Forget that. But what I'm talking about is what you can do instead of bemoaning the is get your kid, take it with your kid, a defensive driving course. Get some adjunct, adjunctive education on the subject.
And the expense aspect should not be considered a reason to not give them that course, because if they if that saves your kid's life, it will be worth whatever it costs you to give them the experience of one of those courses.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.